Okay. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to welcome you to the City Council meeting for the City of Cedar Hills. Today is Tuesday, July the 18th, 2017. I currently have 7:02 p.m. I'd like to call our meeting to order. Pledge tonight will be given by Councilmember Geddes and the invocation by Councilmember Reese. So, Mr. Geddes.
All right, would the audience please rise? Repeat after me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Be seated.
Heavenly Father, we are grateful for the opportunity that we have to meet together tonight as residents of this wonderful community. We are grateful for the city in which we live and for the people here that make it a wonderful place to raise families. We ask you to please bless us this evening as we are discussing the business of the city, that we will have our hearts and minds open to those solutions which best benefit our residents. And these things we pray for in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you very much. I need an approval for the meeting's agenda if someone would like to submit that at this point.
I move that we approve the agenda as is.
Okay. I have a motion to accept the agenda as is. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Mrs. Anderson seconds it. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Next is public comments. And let me grab the sheet. Mr. Berry, am I saying that right?
Barney.
Is Mr. Barney?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
That's
all right. So, Mr. Barney, are you wanting to speak to a specific scheduled item or just in public comments?
Yes, scheduled item.
Which one? Number seven?
I believe so, yeah.
Okay.
And
would you like to speak right before we discuss that item, or would you like to speak during public comments? Either way, you get 3 minutes. Just a question if you want to.
I'd wait till after.
You'll wait till we're about to talk about it.
I'm hopeful that it will be a short.
Okay, so I will bring you up right before item number seven. Mr. Free? And Mr. Free, are you wanting to speak on a specific item or public comments?
Okay,
Mr. Free, I'll welcome you up now. And if you would give us your name, your address, and then you'll have 3 minutes.
Okay, my name is Dave Free. I live at 4309 West Oak Road North. So I've talked to the city before about on Oak Road North, we have a section where the sidewalk was not being able to be built because of the walls that come down from Sandalwood to Oak Road. And that needs to be taken care of one way or another. They say they've allocated weed spraying twice a year, but we get just a tremendous amount of, it looks horrible, really. And whether we put the new house that was just built, they have a slope that comes down, and there's slopes on some of them. Some of them have the bricks, some have the rocks. It's just kind of a hodgepodge of retaining wall there. But on the bottom of it, it's just weeds and dirt. And so if there's some way to level it all out some way, put rocks, decorative rocks on there with a bender board or something going through it to make it look a little more ornate, the rest of the city looks great. And being there for 20, we've been in Cedar Hills for 20 years. I always kind of say jokingly, we're the forgotten part of the city, even though we're the original part of the city. That Oak Road, I don't mind like the golf course, what do they call it, natural. You got sage and you got the grasses and stuff. This is a little more weeds and some of the residents are doing good and they're planning stuff where there should be a sidewalk, as well as the kids have to cross the street on the turn there. And a lot of the city has speed bumps. That street is actually very fast, and there's two turns. We live on one of the turns, and on the other turn, there's a family that has five boys. And so it's really dangerous. There's no sidewalk on our side of the street for five or six houses. And so either needs to be made sidewalk or have a speed bump where the kids can cross the street in a safe place.
Yeah, but different.
space to have it many times.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Free. So Chandler, do you know the area that he's talking about?
Yeah.
Great. So Mr. Free, I'm going to ask the staff to take a look at that, come back to council with a recommendation, okay?
Perfect.
Thank you very much. All right. Unless someone else is wanting to speak for public comments, that is it, and I will close the public comments section of the meeting. And we will move on to the consent agenda. And looks like there is one meeting. It is the meeting from June the 8th, 2017. It's a special city council meeting. So if someone would like to make a motion on the consent agenda, I will take that now.
I move that we approve the consent agenda.
Okay. A motion to accept the consent agenda as is. Is there a second?
Second.
Mr. Bailey seconds it. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Let's move on to city reports and business. Mr. Goodwin, we'll start with you and then go down the row.
Yeah. Starting with recreation, we've just finished up a number of programs that we've started. New programs include coach pitch softball, bowling, Lego camps, volleyball with Lone Peak High School's volleyball coach, and a group called Sylvia's Singers. We're currently having open registrations for another Lego camp, flag football, tot soccer, kindergarten through second grade soccer, teen flag football, and musical theater production of James and the Giant Peach. We recently held a number of golf clinics and had great turnout. Both the beginning and intermediate classes were full. And then due to the hot weather, we're seeing some empty tee times in the afternoon, given that it's a little bit hot for some people to golf. So they're trying to do some promotions to come up with reduced rates to see if we can get some people to fill in those spots. And they're going to be teaming up with Ernie's Deli upstairs to do some golf and grub promos. The park equipment for Bay Hill will be delivered the week of July 24th with an anticipated completion the following week. The golf maintenance building is nearing completion, and the final punch list items have been reviewed by the city's building official and the contractor, and they're working on wrapping that up. And then just for the council and mayor's information, an application for rezoning was filed by the landowner on an Oak Road parcel, and the Planning Commission will hear that application next week on July 25th. That's an application to move a piece that's in the public facility zone into the R111,000 zone. That's all I have.
Thank you very much. Mrs. Reese.
I don't have anything.
Okay. Mr. Zappala.
So I have two issues that I'd like to bring attention to the council, and if council agrees to direct staff to work on these. One is a resident brought to my attention an issue with prescribed burns and neighbors burning trash or weeds in their yard, and the fire was strong enough. This was a while ago before the fire conditions were bad. So it wasn't a concern about fire spreading, but it was a concern about the smoke was so bad and went into their yard, into their house. Like she couldn't even go outside, couldn't have their windows open for a day or so. I talked to Department of Air Quality, and they said the city does have in their power the legislative ability to ban open fires of that nature in their cities. For those kinds of reasons, and so it's something that I'd like to talk about what our options are and whether we might want to make legislation in that area.
I can comment a little bit on that, Daniel. So
sure.
There's a burn season. Typically there's 2 months. Well, it depends on the EPA decides when it is. This year we had 2 months, and then there'll be 2 months in the fall. But you are correct. There are cities such as Provo City that hasn't allowed burning except for agricultural burning for over 20 years now. And I would be very supportive of banning those types of fires. When people do apply for these burn permits, they're good for 3 days. They have to burn. But on them, there's some regulations, and one of them is they got to maintain the smoke, meaning they're not supposed to be burning green stuff. And if they are, all the citizens need to do is, you know, unfortunately, it'd be nice if they could just go and work it out amongst neighbors. But if not, call the police department or fire department or, you know, the non-emergency 911, and we shut them down all the time. We go overly banning because it is a lot of smoke.
We have green waste that we can use.
We do.
Situations.
So,
yeah.
Green waste is free to take to the dump.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other issue is that I've had discussions with a neighbor who You remember we revised our ordinances regarding solar power and alternative energy 6 months back or a year back. It was a little while ago. And I had a conversation with a resident who their neighbor had installed a ground-based solar system. So this was not a solar system mounted on a roof. It was a solar system on a large pedestal in their backyard. It was placed in a way so that if they rotated, it would actually be over their yard. So it was kind of technically in code, but not in code if they rotated it a certain way. It was kind of a weird situation. But I went over and talked with this resident and agreed that it's really kind of an eyesore. They were worried about property values if they ever wanted to sell their home, having this big thing right next door. It's almost like a utility sitting out there. And so I wanted to see if there was interest on the council's part to kind of direct the planning commission to re-examine that issue, maybe go out to this neighbor's house, look and see what they approved and what the ramifications were of what they approved and allowed to be in city code and what the city approved, and maybe consider allowing rooftop solar but banning ground-mounted solar, which is what I would prefer if I was in charge of things.
Thank you. Okay. I have just a couple of items, and we have not met as Mountain Land Association of Government throughout the summer. Our next meeting is in August, and there's a number of things on the agenda that evening. One of them happens to be the county's relationship with cities, and Cedar Hills is going to come up. So I'll report back on how that is at that point. At our last Lone Peak Public Safety meeting, we're still dealing with some employee issues, but Chief Freeman did resign, for those of you that don't know, and we're in the process of nationwide searching for a new chief. In the meantime, Chief Brian Gwilliam of Lone Peak Police is acting as chief over both fire and police. So, Mr. Bailey, Chief Bailey.
I don't have anything to report.
Mrs. Anderson.
I don't have anything to report.
Mr. Geddes.
You covered the Lone Peak, but is there a meeting in July at Lone Peak?
Lone Peak Public Safety?
Yes. Probably not.
I don't believe so.
So the next meeting will be noticed. I don't know exactly why.
You should be getting emails on it.
Okay, but I haven't got one as far as...
Chandler, can you make sure that he's correctly on the email list?
Yeah.
All right.
Chandler, do you know what the next one is? Just so I put it in my calendar.
More than likely, there will not be one in July, but most typically it'll be in August. There's nothing to discuss yet in July.
And is it the first?
It's usually the... I want to say it's the fourth Thursday in July of the month.
It's fourth Thursday. Okay, thank you.
Okay. All right. Now we're moving on to our scheduled items. Number seven is a discussion on Cedar Hills insurance coverage for utilities. Mr. Barney, I'm going to invite you to come up now. If you wanted to give your name, your address, and you'll have 3 minutes.
Okay. Rhett Barney. I live at 3914 Morgan, just the corner of Canyon, where the townhomes there. And on, I think it was May 8th, we had that water break. And I'm not sure if you were able to get the email that we sent on Friday with all the damages and so forth. We sent it to Gretchen, I believe. And I'm not sure if what you had to do with it so far, but so I'm hoping that it just goes smoothly and we work this out pretty easily. But the gist of it was we were directed by the city person on site to call a disaster cleanup, which we did, and then we talked to the office staff, and they said the same thing. And then they directed them because there was sewer involved. What happened was there was water in our basement that knocked out our internet, so we went down in the basement. It was all wet downstairs, and there's pictures of it in the email we sent. And so then we were directed, because it came out of the sewer and the on-site staff recognized that it did come out of the sewer and it wasn't just through the foundation. So we've gone to our HOA insurance as well as, or at least our president, and then our homeowners insurance, and they won't cover it because it came from the sewer. And they directed and said that the city should be responsible for it. And so that's what our assumption is right now. And so we're just asking to look over that email and see if we can recoup that amount. Each of the four units were covered or were affected in some way. And so we've been working through the disaster cleanup company. They've been our point of contact. It made it simple and easy, and everybody was involved, so that's worked out well. And so the one lady at the end, Mrs. Barrett, I'm not sure her address, but she's on the other end of the building. She's not here, but we've had her, we've been talking with her and working with her. So the main point is we just would like to see if we can get that covered. And the last is, it is insurance standard, the billing, it's what any insurance company would be receiving. That's about all I have.
Okay.
Any questions? I would like to know if everybody's seen the email.
I have not.
I have not.
No one has seen the email yet?
We're going to be talking about that tonight, so we should prepare that.
So we're going to be talking about it right now.
I was a little blind on exactly what this was exactly.
That was for staff, and I'll talk about it, but that was for staff to take all the claims and then bring them to the city council tonight, so we can have to worry about
it. But we are going to discuss it right now.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Barney. Okay, so let's go to our scheduled items. And Mr. Goodwin, and we also have some guests from Olympus Insurance, Brian and Darren and Daryl Child. So, Chandler, why don't you start, and then we'll turn the time over to the Childs.
Staff did reach out. I had Gretchen reach out to each of the affected homes to ask them for a list, an itemized list of damages. And we've been able to get invoices from the disaster cleanup group for the mitigation of what happened on the day of the line break, and then some estimates as far as the restoration as well. And then there's been some replacement issues, another one carpet that needed to be replaced, and then some other miscellaneous items that some of the residents were claiming. And we have that here, and we've removed names, just simply house one, house two, house three, house four. And so I'll pass those out so you can see those. So thank you to the residents for providing that, and thank you to Gretchen for putting that together. But before we get too far into this, I would like to have the child give their presentation from Olympus Insurance, if that's okay.
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 Daryl, why don't you start?
Excuse me. We appreciate the opportunity to take a few minutes with the city council. Preston's going to go ahead, and it's actually Preston instead of Brian that here tonight, and we'll advance the slides. This program is designed just to give the council an understanding of what is in the present insurance program, and then some alternatives that you can consider specifically relative to the situations like the one that you're facing tonight. So we want to have a good understanding of what present insurance will do, and then possibly some other alternatives that you can consider in addition to that. In your present insurance program, there is coverage for all of the city operations. And everyone can see the slides that include city facilities, operations, golf courses, parks, streets, utilities. Basically, that's the way the coverage is designed, is to cover the liability that may arise from any of the operations that occur with the city. The program is designed also to cover both the property, scheduled equipment, employees, public officials, use of vehicles. All of that is encompassed within the present program. The liability program, and this is where I think we're getting to the heart of the discussion or the issue that you're looking at tonight, is designed to pick up the legal liabilities that may arise against the city as they are defined. That's an important consideration, is that all of the liability policies will dovetail exactly with the legal liabilities that may arise as they're defined by the courts and by the statutes upon which we all rest our case law, for example, within the state of Utah. Now, the insurance coverage also has a duty to defend us in all allegations or all claims that may arise from our city operations. So quite often when an event arises, the insurance company will send an investigator out and they'll make a determination if the city's legally liable, and then they will defend the city against all claims that may arise for the city. If it's determined that they are legally liable, then of course the adjuster will step in and make adjustment. And I put a couple of examples in here, maybe you can move to those on how we frame it. Maybe move one back if you could, Preston, there. Negligence is prescribed by several different things. One is if we know about a known problem within our facilities, our operations, our utility lines, and we don't respond to that problem, then we're going to be negligent. If we're actually working upon our facilities, then we potentially can cause negligence or a problem. And the other is that we just simply don't maintain that which we have. So if we're just derelict in our duties of what we're maintaining. And I wanted to show a few examples of how all of this works. And these are actual claim events. This one happened about a year and a half ago. City Water Department responded to a call that a valve in the meter box was leaking and determined that the repair could wait for another day. During the night, the valve failed, flooding several homes. Clearly, they knew about a problem. They did not immediately address the problem. They didn't follow procedures or shut water off and take care of the problem. And this ended up being quite a sizable claim because one of the homes, they had settlement of a garage and related facilities and ended up being about close to $100,000 loss event simply because this particular city didn't address a problem when it became known or an issue to them. The second is the city installed a pressure reduction valve incorrectly, and this happened to be in a very high-end home area, and that pressure reduction valve flooded out a very expensive home, about a $10 million home. And this ended up being close to a $500,000 claim simply because the city had not installed the pressure reduction valve correctly. It resulted in a flood out and it ended up being quite a costly claim. So basically that gives us the feel. I think we have one more on the sewer where a sewer collection agency had not properly marked lines when they were marked with blue stake and ended up causing the sewer backup and ended up being a sizable event. Obviously, we could talk about a lot of different claim type of events because there are many. As we run water and sewer utilities, this is going to be something that will happen. Sometimes we become aware of things, sometimes things aren't done correctly, and the legal liability is going to be covered because of that. Now we get into the issue of there are times when just because we own facilities that we will not be, and something may happen, and the most common is we'll get settlement on lines, both sewer and water lines, where there'll just be something in the ground that causes that line to settle, rupture, and break, and we have no awareness, we have no prior. The insurance company in that situation would still defend the city and take care of the city, but there's no finding of negligence to trigger them actually paying a claim on behalf of the city. And this all goes back, just to give the council a little bit of background, to English common law, which is called sovereign immunity. And municipalities and water agencies within the state of Utah enjoy some limited protection in regards to sovereign immunity. And that sovereign immunity basically is designed to protect the assets of the community from a lot of extraneous claims, the budget and the assets of the city. And this is the way our statutes are crafted. And there was a recent case, if you can pull that up, that was decided by the Utah Supreme Court. It was called Jenkins versus Jordan Valley. And many may be familiar that Jordan Valley is one of the largest water agencies within the state of Utah. And in addition to distributing wholesale water to many cities, they also have service areas where they service the consumers directly. And in this particular case, a line had ruptured in Jordan Valley system. The lower courts had determined that Jordan Valley should have been responsible for that line rupture. That was appealed to the Utah Supreme Court, and the Utah Supreme Court held that because Jordan Valley didn't have prior awareness that there was a problem with that line, that they would not be legally responsible. I know a little bit about Jordan Valley's situation. They self-insure a lot of their claim events, and they had made the determination that they were only going to follow legal liability. Which all leads us into, I think, one of the things that we primarily wanted to talk about tonight, which is called no-fault sewer planning and water planning. Virtually all of our clients and many of the communities, water agencies within the state of Utah, have either considered or adopted procedures which we call good neighbor policies. Even though we don't have direct legal responsibility and therefore our insurance companies only have to respond to legal responsibility, we still feel a duty to know that there is a framework in place that's going to cover you when you are directly negligent, and that's the insurance that you've procured. But the city council can set the parameters on the good neighbor policy that you want to adopt, knowing that some of your citizens may be impacted by a line break that could be a result of no fault of your own, but you still feel a responsibility as a good neighbor to try and assist and to help take care of. Now, most of the good neighbor no fault policies are designed to provide a benefit that will assist in cleanup and possibly that they would only come in as a good neighbor if the insurance had been already exhausted. And I can give you a little bit of background on the personal insurance that people can secure. Most personal lines insurance policies, most homeowners policies, will cover accidental water discharge, but some will define it more narrowly and some will define it more broadly. The carriers that define it more broadly will say it doesn't matter where that accidental water discharge comes from. It can come from a line break in the city's line, or it can come from a hot water heater that explodes within their own home. The more narrow insurance carriers basically will only respond to accidental water discharge when it occurs in the home. In regards to sewer backups, that's an elective coverage on most homeowners' plans. It's an endorsement that has to be elected for a nominal additional premium. And so as we've worked with clients that adopt good neighbor policies, we've also helped them put advisories out, and sometimes you have newsletters and other advisories, advising the citizens that it would be a good idea for them to take these elective coverages on their own personal policies. That limits the amount that the city may have to participate in on a good neighbor basis if they have their insurance resource to rely upon in the first place. And that's a very, very quick overview on legal liability and no-fault strategies, but I did want to allow time for the council so that we could maybe dialogue on some of the issues and some of the discussion points that we've gone through.
So, Mr. Child, I'm familiar with the negligent issue and how that plays. So our previous insurance carrier had a no-fault provision in the policy. It sounds like you're saying that your company does not provide a no-fault coverage. Is that correct? And if we wanted to implement the good neighbor policy, if you will, are we self-insuring ourselves? Is that what we're doing?
It's kind of a combination, Mayor, between the two. We find that if you can do your no-fault strategy off-ledger and not have it treated as your claims experience, that it's cost-beneficial to the policyholder over the long term. I think we all recognize that if we put a lot of claims into any insurance carrier, whether it's our personal auto.
Your rates will go up.
They're going to increase premiums.
Yeah.
And we find if we can go off ledger, now our insurance companies also recognize that these are events that require some assistance and management. And so many of the insurance carriers will come in and say, we'll help you manage the event, but we'll, according to your parameters, but you'll directly fund it, but we'll help adjust the claims and manage it.
So you'll just help on the adjusting side, but the city would self-insure itself.
Right.
Got it. Yeah. So, Council, if you read my column this month, you'll know that I specifically wrote about this issue and talked about how I encourage each resident to check with their homeowner's insurance and find out what is covered, what's not covered, because there is a difference. I understand what you're talking about in terms of standing water that can come into the home versus water that's discharged from the home, stays in the home, and a lot of times homeowners will cover that, but they won't cover standing water that comes from an outside source into the home. So at least that's my homeowner's insurance. That's how it works. So we're encouraging the residents to check on their own policies, and we should do this on a regular basis in terms of making sure the residents are aware of the liability that they have. However, I think we should listen to these residents and find some common ground. So,
and one comment I might make, Mayor, is that I think as I've worked with many, many city councils on this specific issue, I think it's very beneficial if you can set some guidelines in advance, well in advance. Well, obviously you're dealing with the situation right now, but if you can kind of set the parameters and guidelines in advance, and we can provide to management some of the samples of some of the policies and guidelines that other cities have adopted and maybe use those as templates, because you can set the amount of participation, the thresholds, how much the city wants to be involved in a good neighbor type of basis.
Right.
We don't encourage water agencies or cities to kind of leave this kind of open so that you just deal with it when the situations come up. It's always beneficial if you can have a framework in place in advance. And that also assures one of the key things that we like to see is that we have equity and fairness, so that you're not responding to one citizen situation in April and a different citizen situation, a different set of facts in a different way maybe a year from now, so that you have some consistency, some uniformity in the way you apply.
Thank you very much. Council, do you have any questions for Mr. Child?
I was just going to say exactly what you said is what I'd like to see. I'd like to see how other cities around our size, the kind of policy that they have, because I agree. I think if we're just handling this on a case-by-case basis, there's going to be at some point where it's not fair and it's not handled equitably. So I would love to see policies that other cities have implemented that include if there are what instances that applies. If there are caps of how much, if they do have to go through their insurance, their homeowner's insurance first, I'd love to see all of those policies.
Good.
And are they done by ordinance? Is that how it's handled?
Typically.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Any other questions from council members? Chandler, are you wanting to add some more thoughts?
I could.
Please.
I appreciate the Olympus coming down here on short notice and being willing to give that presentation. This is not the first time we've had an issue like this come up. Jenny, on my computer, there's a second stack of spreadsheets if you're going to pass those down. What we're passing out now is an instance that happened in 2012 was the Manila Creek sewer backup. On this one, it's a cul-de-sac that kind of runs downhill, and in this case, some vandalism occurred where people wrapped sticks with some cloth and some balls and put them into the sewer line and clogged the sewer line. What resulted was that the three homes had raw sewage back up into their home. Clearly in this state, in this instance, the city was not negligent. We cannot prevent that from happening. And our insurance at the time, we were with the Utah the trust, and they denied it. So I really appreciate Olympus coming down and giving the city some guidelines that we can move forward and helping us to develop that framework, because I feel like if the trust would have given that same guideline, 5 years ago, we may have been in a different situation today. But nonetheless, this spreadsheet that you've passed out shows the three houses that were damaged by the incidents of the sewer. And you can see the two spreadsheets that we've given you, one for the current issue and one for the Mill Creek issue. In both cases, it's broken down into mitigation, restoration, personal loss, and then a household claim. We're trying to do this very similar. Personal loss would be the last two columns, the replacement and miscellaneous. In the case of the Manila Creek backup, the city did have a no-fault sewer protection that our insurance at the time paid each homeowner $5,000. Now, that's treated, as Daryl said, that's treated as a claim the next time we go around for to schedule our premium for the next year. So, and that's where you were saying it's not smart to probably go through the insurance on that, because then we're paying dollar for dollar, if not more, the next year to cover those instances. Now, so you can see what the city paid on that last column to each of the three homes. House one received a payment of $7,900. House two received $5,500. House three, $1,600. And then you can see kind of in terms of the mitigation and the restoration, how much that covered. It didn't cover 100% of each homeowner's claim. And this is where I think the word that Daryl used that I liked was assist. This is where the city needs to come in and say, how do we assist the residents in the instance on Morgan? So once again, thank you to Gretchen and the homeowners for providing the information and the documentation we requested. Back to the Morgan Boulevard spreadsheet, if you will. You can see the mitigation costs, the restoration costs, replacement, and then the miscellaneous costs that were provided, and then a total for each home. Now, because this was a sewer and water main, he's still there. I spoke with Charles today, and this would be funded out of the water and sewer fund balance. Now, the concern is that if you dip too far into the fund balance of the water and sewer fund, you will put your debt service coverage ratio in jeopardy. That has to be maintained. I think it's 1.25.
Yeah, so your expenses are too close to your revenues. And by this is considered an expense, it's not something we capitalize. So then.
Do you want to come to the mic and say this? Thanks.
I mean, if this had been like a $500,000 thing, like he was explaining for once, that would totally ruin our debt service coverage. There's no way that we could pay that. So, in this case, I think we're okay, but I just want to warn you that we can't handle any case because it would kill our debt service coverage, because it is an expense, not something we can capitalize.
Thank you, Cheryl. Mr. Goodwin, do you have any other thoughts, comments?
Yeah, so the council, we need direction. This is not a vote, but we would like direction on how you would like staff to proceed on these claims against the city. How would you like to proceed with the resident? How you'd like staff to?
So I'll start off,
please,
by giving you my thoughts, which is that there is a precedent. I don't know if it's been set, but there is a precedent for this. But I do think that the city cannot have a policy of constantly replacing items, mitigation, restoration. So I think we should have a real PR effort to the residents. And I think we're talking about next year's disaster town hall, talking specifically about this and making sure that every resident is contacting their homeowners to make sure that they're covered when they should be, or how they think that they should be. But I think we should take up Olympus on their ability to adjust some claims, and as I mentioned, listen to these residents, find some common ground, and see if we can resolve this, and then make it clear to the residents going forward that unless the city's negligent, that they're probably not going to cover. That's just how the lie is. But I do want to work with you guys in terms of figuring out some common ground in terms of what your claims look like, have Olympus adjust those. And it may not be all that you're wanting, and maybe, you know, not what the city's wanting, but maybe we can find some common ground there. So, Council, I welcome your thoughts.
Can I ask you a question, Mayor?
Yes.
So I actually looked up, I actually had my agent, we talked about this, and there's a little rider you can get for...
There is.
And it's very inexpensive to cover sewer backup and stuff like that. So I have it, but I don't, I mean, I just, because it was cheap and I, you know. But my question is, do we know how this settlement was reached on this Manila Creek? I mean, it's kind of all over the board. I mean,
we'd have, it is all over the board. We'd have to go through the emails and any documentation the city still has and find out how they reached those numbers, because there's not a clear formula that there appears to be. You know, some are more, some are less. So I don't know the answer to that question. There's going to have to be some research.
I mean, I like what you said, Mayor, about having Olympus help us mitigate the, I mean, adjust these a little bit. I know the disaster guys have their policies and what their procedures and stuff, but I mean, I'm a contractor. I wish I could get that kind of rates all the time. But, you know, they kind of get the disaster guys, no offense, guys, if there's any disaster guys, like Rob Olson. He's a great guy, good company. But, you know, I don't know. It just sometimes seems a little bit out of whack.
Okay. Mr. Bailey, you have any thoughts?
Yeah, just personally, what's aggravating to me is as a homeowner, as a resident, you know, as a member of the city, is we have these insurance policies, and, you know, I would personally expect between the city's insurance and my homeowner's insurance, you know, that something like this would be covered. I mean, this is, it's a broken water line. How is that not covered under something? And everybody doesn't, rhetorical question, but nobody wants to take responsibility for it. You know, the city's insurance doesn't want to take responsibility for it. The homeowner's insurance doesn't, you know, and then, hey, well, state law, this and that. And it just, to me, it's, insurance can get pretty complicated, you know. We live on a fault line, but how many of us have earthquake insurance, you know? Yeah, one.
I do, too.
You know?
I do, too.
Two. You know, there's a few. But there again, when you buy an insurance policy, you just expect, hey, I'm going to pay my money, and when something happens, please take care of me. And it just... It's so aggravating because I've had to deal with insurance companies when they just say no, sorry, no, and it goes to the fine print.
Yeah.
And that doesn't make for good. So
yeah,
I empathize and sympathize. Well, I can't sympathize because I've never had a city water main break and flood my house. But we need to help them. 100%. We need to help them. This was the city's line. Yeah, it was a fluke accident, but, you know, I've gone on and said, you know, sometimes maybe we shouldn't go with low bid. This very well could have been low bid. You know, as far as I understand, it was a rock, it was teetering, it split, and now we're at where we're at. Whoever engineered, I mean, do we have any resource that we can go back to the put it in?
Well, engineer a pipe to sit on a rock point. That's
no, but they're going to engineer the gravel that needs to be, that needs to sit on and this and that. Do we have any, as a city, do we have recourse to go, did we put it in or did we hire somebody?
It would have been hired out.
How old is that line? 20 years?
It probably was done by the developer, I'm guessing, which was the developer of that whole site. But you're looking at least 14 years. What do you think, Jeff? 15 years.
Yeah. There again, I understand fluke accidents happen. In all honesty, I am good with helping these folks out. They shouldn't have to bear the cost of this. You know, I just... My aggravation lies with the insurance companies.
Well, and we spoke with Daryl about insuring the the subsurface infrastructure of the city. And my understanding is that it's cost prohibitive to do so. That's why no city does it, because it's just costs so much money. And these claims don't come up every year. I mean, our last one was 5 years ago, but they do happen. These instances do happen. But yeah. Could you speak to the cost there? Why cities don't, why this isn't insured? Or?
Yeah, basically, we wouldn't have enough claim payments made for the premium that you would have to charge. That's kind of the simplified version. They would have to charge a rate based on the whole physical plan, and only one little area is subject to a loss at any one time. So the premium would far outchase potential losses that you may have. It's far more cost effective just to simply set reserve funds.
Yeah.
So one other quick question on that. Do we have a summary yet of what the city spent to get this back into working order? And it's paved now.
It's paved now. I only know the... Because our public works...
Because I haven't seen...
Our public works crew did a lot of the work. So they were there on site for a lot of the time. But the asphalt came in under $50,000. So they didn't have to go through a public bid. It was Eccles Paving that did it. And I believe it was just over $40,000.
As I recall, it was $49,000.
And the rest was all done internally, right, Jeff? Yeah, I mean, kudos to our to our staff.
So that includes in-house, but I mean, like, the city's paying their time.
Right, sure. I mean, we have to acknowledge that we spent time and money on it. I mean, there were some parts and things as well.
I mean, and the city's, we weren't able to claim insurance on our land. We just had to find the money to be able to fix that.
I don't think we've seen a budget adjustment yet for this yet, right?
This was in the last year. We were able to use some of the road money.
Okay. I want to move along. Mr. Zappala, you have any thoughts?
I think, like Ben, I'm a little bit frustrated
with the insurance.
You know, I would have expected that you buy insurance and it protects you from these sort of things. I think, I'm frustrated that insurance doesn't cover these things. If I was in their situation, I would also be unhappy that city's infrastructure broke and it damaged my house. And now I'm out $20,000 to pay for it. It's a tough hill to swallow.
Yep. Okay. Mrs. Reese, any thoughts?
So I guess I like the idea of having some kind of a good neighbor policy going forward, so we're not faced with the situation. I like the idea of finding some way to set money aside on a regular basis. Maybe that comes because we increase taxes a little bit, and you just think of that as an insurance policy that we're buying for our residents. So if it's going to cost everybody an extra $5 a month so that we can have this kind of reserve policy, maybe that's what we need to do. But that would solve this kind of issue long term.
Thank you. Mrs. Reese, any thoughts?
I would just echo what Mike said. I would like to see how we came to the numbers we did on the Manila Creek Road. And I would also like to see, again, policies that other cities have implemented so we have a general idea of what other cities are doing.
Okay. Mrs. Anderson, any thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. I'm totally for the good neighbor policy. We need to provide for something in the future. But also, I mean, looking at the percentage that we paid on the Manila Creek, doing something similar for this instance.
Okay, so I think you have your marching orders, Chandler, that the council seems to be in agreement that so the Manila Creek used an adjusting method in order to come up with this. I know it was a different insurance company, but...
We'll work with Olympus if we can sit down with them, go through the claims and itemize them and possibly bring those numbers back to the council.
Very good. Okay. Got you. Thank you.
Just one quick comment is it looks like Orem recently adopted city code dealing with, they have a whole chapter 10 on flood damage prevention, so we can read through their code and see what they do.
Yeah, our city is going to regularly and consistently remind the residents that they need to check their homeowners. And Mike, I would check with yours again, because sewer backup is covered, standing water, not always covered. And that's what happened to these nice people, is that standing water, which came from outside their home in, is not always covered. Sewer backup is.
Okay.
So, anyways, we will get back to you, ladies and gentlemen, and sorry for all that you've had to go through. It's not your fault. It's not the city's fault. It's in limbo. And so we're gonna figure out something that works for you guys and works for the city as well.
We'll be in communication with the residents.
That's a good question.
What's that?
Time frame.
We'll try to have numbers by August 1st to bring to the council for approval.
Okay. That's not too far away.
It's our next meeting.
All right. Yes, ma'am.
This is totally then if the city's not responsible, can you go after the person that was responsible?
I think that's the discussion that Mr. Bailey was having, is there someone to go after? And I believe that it was determined that the city maintained our lines, so the city's not negligent. It may be hard to pinpoint exactly who to point a finger at.
But that's a possibility to research that.
Probably not now.
Anything's possible, but I wouldn't hang my hat on that.
But please look into that, Chairman.
I have little faith that that's going to amount to the resolution.
Yeah, let's at least look. Thank you.
Okay. All right. I think you've had enough information on that. We're going to move on to item number. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I thought this might help out just in the discussion here. So I want to help on the disaster recovery for the residents there. Just in our industry. The pricing in our industry is carefully regulated by the insurance companies, actually. They hold the prices down, adjust the prices and everything. It's done in a very uniform way. And our local company, Exactware, up there at the point of the mountain, they own the entire industry in the whole country. And so all of these claims that have been put in thought are very helpful for you to know that they were done in the Exactware software according to exact protocol for going through what is called Category 3 sewer cleanup. And so we're regulated in a very big way, legally, in the insurance companies and such, to be able to follow that protocol in cleaning up a sewer policy or a sewer cleanup so that we don't have any, continuing microbes and those kind of things that would make people sick in their homes. And so those, I actually turned in the exact where policy adjustments that had been done already to the city, that it's already been completed for that. And so it's exactly according to Exactware, to insurance policy, to the adjusters that we work with on a daily basis. They look over these and it's kind of like, okay, yes, okay, yes, okay, yes, okay, yes. And it's pretty a routine thing. And so those have all been done and we would welcome working with another adjuster and if they want to review it and work directly with them to be able to do that.
All right, then there's a good chance we'll be in touch when that review happens.
Sure.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, thank you very much.
Can I clarify one thing, Chandler? I'm sorry. Because we had a water main break, but it sounded like from their description that it was actually a sewer issue.
It backed up into the sewer.
It backed up into the sewer. And
it was in the sewer that it actually came up into the home. So it was a water line, but if you look at the pictures from the event, the pipe burst, and there's such high pressure in that pipe that the subsurface of the road, it kind of blew through, and that's where you see the waving in the road. But it blew into sewer manholes and then backed up into sewers, and then that clog backed up the homes.
So this is sort of, from the homeowner's insurance perspective, sort of the typical thing that would have been covered under a sewer rider if homeowners
may
had
not,
that,
they,
maybe, or not, because
I don't know.
It's not a typical
not
sewer backup.
I'm not an insurance expert at all in this regard, and so this is why I would say that everyone should call your homeowner's insurance and ask questions.
Insurance the day of the event.
Yes.
That morning, they said, no, we put the rider on that same day. Doesn't help us now. No.
Yeah, but if you had the rider on, would it have covered it? Because it was a sewer backup?
It was iffy. Because it was an outside line and it wasn't directly from the sewer.
That's the point. She's absolutely
yes,
right.
This is a tricky thing of covering residents in this case because you could have done the right thing to begin with and gotten a sewer rider, and then the insurance company could have still told
still
you.
Still said no.
Yeah. No, in this case, which is frustrating.
No.
So.
And my homeowner's insurance said if I would have washed a rag down the toilet or something like that they would have covered it. But not this.
Yeah, it's because it comes from outside the home. All right. Chandler, anything else? Let's move on. We have an action item on number 8, which is an ordinance regulating fireworks. And so I do like the discussion that we had prior to July the 4th that was reasonable and good. So, Chandler, I look forward to hearing what you have to say.
So the resolution that's currently in place limits aerials on the east side of the city and throughout certain areas that have been identified on that city map that was issued to the public, as well as mobile fireworks. It still allows for the ground fireworks that people typically buy, the ones that don't shoot up into the air. So this ordinance, oh, and one other thing, we also limited open fires in that resolution. Now, this ordinance only addresses aerials right now. And the reason I've only addressed aerials is that conditions change year over year, but I don't foresee a circumstance where we're ever going to allow aerials east of Canyon Road. Now, there could be times where it's still green in July and we would allow open fires. There could be times where it's green and we don't have an issue with the mobile fireworks. But it could be times when it's very, very dry, even drier than it is now, and we would allow nothing throughout the entire city. And that's why we're just focusing on aerials right now. And this could be coming back for some modifications, but the state code does say that to adopt ordinances that are necessary and proper to provide for the safety and preserve the health and promote the prosperity, improve the morals, peace and good order, comfort and convenience of the city and its inhabitants, and for the protection of property in the city. That's the reason the cities pass ordinances. And so due to the dry environment that exists on the hillside in the H1 zone, we feel like it's necessary to prohibit certain types of fireworks year in, year out, not just on a resolution basis. And so this ordinance would amend Cedar Hills Code 5-2-3 by prohibiting the discharge of aerial fireworks in any part of the Cedar Hills east of Canyon Road where the threat of the fire is greatest, as has been evidenced in Alpine over the last couple of weeks. So the code, as it's written right now, it says it shall be unlawful to discharge or ignite an aerial device as defined by Utah Administrative Code R710-5-3 on any property east of Canyon Road within the city limits of the city of Cedar Hills. And that gives a definition of the size of the firework being used. And the reason we've limited it to aerials is that there's a specific definition in the administrative code for aerials. There's not one for mobile fireworks. So that becomes a little more problematic when you start to try to define those other ones. So
that's the spinners we talked about.
Yeah, that's the ground blossom flowers. Yeah.
So I have a question. Yeah. When we, in our last meeting, when we discussed this, we had created that map, and there were other areas in the city that we had determined were also unsafe for aerial use. So why, instead of just saying on the east side of Canyon Road, why do we not change the ordinance to reference that map? For two reasons. Number one, it identifies other areas in the city that we also said were dangerous. And secondly, instead of every year having to change the ordinance, because we know resolutions are unenforceable, so changing the ordinance on an annual basis, if weather conditions are better or worse or whatever, we can just change the map and have the ordinance say as per the city's map that will be provided on an annual basis. Otherwise, we're going to change the ordinance.
I get nervous about that just because it's an ordinance that changes year over year. That kind of gives me some hesitation. This is why I was kind of landing on the side of define something and have it be prohibited outright without tying it to an ordinance. Because there's going to be times when you can probably have an open fire east of Canyon Road and it's not going to be a big deal. And we could put in the map.
Well, the reason why I say that is because this is my fifth year on the council dealing with this exact issue, and almost every year this is what happens. On July 4th, we have some restrictions, and then on July 24th, we have much harder restrictions, and it's happened every year, or much more restrictions. So what I'm saying is, if we continue with that pattern, we're going to have to change the ordinance every single year, maybe multiple times a year.
I'm not proposing to change the ordinance every single year. I'm proposing to have the ordinance in place. So the questions that we look at each year, each fire season, are where aerial is going to be allowed, where open fire is going to be allowed, and then we pick areas throughout the city, and then this year we brought in mobile fireworks into the equation. Mm-hmm. Open fireworks will still be a resolution. I'm not proposing that we change this ordinance year in, year out.
But the problem that we've heard last time is that if it's a resolution and people don't follow the resolution, there's nothing the police department can do about it.
Right.
So it's pointless.
There is some truth to that, and I see where you're going with that. I just don't know how to define mobile firework into this, and that's where I was going with. There's a state definition for an aerial firework that we can use, but how do you define mobile firework?
Can't we define it in our ordinance by saying that it has to be stationary, meaning it doesn't leave? I mean, we can define it however we want,
can.
Right?
We can. I like tying it to a state ordinance. So I mean, we can do that. I don't think that's impossible.
That's my biggest concern. I just feel like we're changing this. We do change it every year, sometimes twice a year.
But are you willing to tie it down by ordinance that no mobile fireworks ever, even if it's green on the east side, that you can't do mobile fireworks?
ever.
That's what Highland and Alpine have both done, and we have the same fire department that they have. Mm-hmm. And so I think it, well, for two reasons. Number one, we've done the same thing with water restrictions, which is even this year when we've had a better water year, we kept our water restrictions in place because we said it's hard to get the word out every year that it's going to be different this year, and now this year it's going to be something else. And so we, for consistency's sake, we have felt that we have better overall compliance, and residents understand what the rules are if they're just always the rules. And I think that I don't see why there's a difference for fireworks. I think a lot of the instances that we have when people are lighting off fireworks when they're not supposed to is not because of a willful desire to break the law, but it's just too confusing that we change our resolution every year and sometimes multiple times a year.
Yeah, I agree. And that's why we are pushing this more towards ordinance form.
Yeah, so, which is why I really liked the map, because I felt it was clear.
And we can adopt the map. We can change this and incorporate the map into the code. And say it should be unlawful to discharge any aerial device on any area identified on following map, and then give it a reference number and have that in the code. It still doesn't answer our question of mobile fireworks and open fires that could change year over year.
Right.
Like where the environment could be, because there's probably people out in on the east side of Canyon Road that have fire pits that I understand it's dry this year and I'm not going to have an open fire, but you know, in a year when it is not dry, when it's reasonably, you know, wet and there's green plants, why can't I have my open fire? So that's, I think those are the things that do change year over year.
So I have similar thoughts, but I would propose something different.
Okay.
I understand the reason why we put Canyon Road as our boundary, because it's sort of a natural boundary. But the problem is we have lots of other areas in the city where aerials are dangerous. We have the large area that's to the north of Cottonwood Drive over by the golf course that I would be heartbroken if that area went up. That's an area heavily used by our residents. South of Cottonwood Drive and the golf course, we still have a lot of wild land areas. That stretch of land that kind of straddles Juniper Heights and Cottonwood Drive down lower where I live has lots of undeveloped land in there. In fact, we had a fire there this year from a firework, and the department had to respond in that area. We have such an integration of wildland with our city. I'm not comfortable with Cedar Hills, with that Canyon Road being the boundary.
So
I would say we ought to ban aerials citywide. I just don't think it's safe to have them in our city. We have too many areas that have undeveloped land and that have integration with wildland.
I don't think the state legislature allows us to do that.
I don't know that we are allowed to ban them areas citywide. I think that you do have to identify certain areas where they are allowed.
From my understanding, the state legislature took away our ability to outright.
My understanding is that it says at the urban wild land interface, and I could argue we have that throughout our city. We have a green zone, which turns into a brown zone that stretches throughout the length of our city along Forest Creek.
And we can look into that.
But I don't know if that constitutes urban interface. I think urban interface is more the homes go into the mountains, into the Forest Service and all that. But that would be a question for David.
We have the deer coming through there all the time. I call that pretty wild land.
Fortunately, that is the purpose of political debates. And so while you may agree that it should be one thing, someone else may agree that it should be another. And unless it's expressly defined in code, which I would need to do some research on, that is where you would step in and define it as such.
At the very least, I would say north of Canyon Road as well.
So
and
why would we just adopt the map then, because it identifies that area as well in Cottonwood, the entire golf course, which is a lot of native land, everything east of Canyon Road, as well as parks, the Oak Grove parcel that you're referring to, Smart Piece, large dry areas.
I'm okay with adopting a map, but I would actually draw the boundaries a little bit wider than what we have right now, because aerials go up and can travel a decent amount.
How big of a perimeter around the areas identified on the map would you increase it to? Right now it's identified at 100 feet.
Yeah, I would draw it bigger than that.
How big? Do you have an idea?
I'd have to look at a map and I could show you, you know, for example, Cottonwood Drive, I wouldn't allow them on Cottonwood Drive. right behind the homes is lots of dry brush.
Okay.
It's dry all year round. That stuff would go up really, really fast. So
and we see that during the family festival. There's always a fire.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, there was a fire just this year down from your house.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about.
Yeah.
It was, wasn't that during the fireworks? Or,
no, that was on July 4th.
On July 4th.
Okay. Now,
so I'm okay with, with the map, but I would draw a little more aggressive boundaries.
Let me throw something in, because you're saying that our resolution doesn't have any teeth, and you're right. That's why I want to put it in ordinance form. We're, what, 2 days away from going back into the week of fireworks,
yep.
Right? So do you want to adopt some ordinance now and then revisit this?
I would say yes, but I would change it. Instead of saying East Companion Road, I would say
all areas
as
identified
on the map that we just created.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with that.
I think that's okay.
I would like to revisit the map for future years.
Okay, I just hate to say let's table this for next month when we can give something some teeth this week and then give the police officer something to go to residents that are in violation of this, putting others in danger. That's why I would say I think it would be prudent to adopt something tonight and then in August rework it and refine it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Chief Edwards, you okay with that?
So let me ask a question. Chief Bailey, Chief Edwards, has there been a fire in Cedar Hills ever attributed to fireworks?
Yes.
How many?
It was last week.
No, it wasn't. Last week was
July 4th.
Last week
from my house.
We had a fire on July 4th.
There was one on July 4th. And unfortunately for that one, we were actually up on other fires in Alpine and Highland, and we had to have other cities respond into our area to take care of that.
Mm.
It ended up being a smaller fire. I don't know, like 50 by 20. But we have.
But have it happen in your home, and I guarantee you.
And then also,
not happy. That
yeah, it does happen.
Annually at the family festival, there's always a
family
fire.
Festival fireworks always start the hill behind the driving range
there's
on fire.
There's always a fire there.
Not but you, granted, but you guys are
much
there.
Larger
but we're
there.
And we have the fire
that.
Department there.
And the fire department is there ready to respond. But nonetheless, yeah, fireworks have started a number of fires.
If we have the map like we already do, I'm good with that.
I would rather the language be looser than tighter. And talk to the residents a lot about personal responsibility, talk to them about the consequences of them starting fires, and they may have to pay for that. I would rather go that route as opposed to being more restrictive.
I would rather be restrictive.
I know you would.
Well, this has been an interesting conversation, and I get the personal responsibility. From what I understand, and Ben, you can correct me if I'm wrong, the last article I read was something like only 10% of the cost associated with fire actually ever gets recouped, and so the responsibility, statistically, people actually taking responsibility and accountability for it is very low. I think, yeah, it was 10% in the article that I read. And I just look at other things that we have. I mean, we tell residents who live on a trail they can't have a privacy fence. We tell people they can't have roosters. We tell them that if they don't have a landscaped yard, they're going to be fined every month until they do. And so we have restrictions to set a certain tone in our community and for the safety of our residents. And so I guess I just don't see that having some restrictions on a device that you light on fire and set into the air and have no control over where it goes all of a sudden makes us these horrible tyrants who want to take away personal liberties. To me, the fence issue is a bigger deal than the fireworks issue, but it's just a hard one, especially when we see year after year the amount of damage that we're seeing in Alpine and just in our communities due to fire.
What caused the fire in Alpine, Chief?
What I'm hearing is target shooting.
That's what I'm hearing too.
Which is also outlawed.
It was a fire in the campfire.
Campfire, right? So I'd just be careful with the language here in being overly restrictive, and I would always focus on personal responsibility and educating the residents more about the consequences of their actions. But if you want to be more restrictive, I suggest you go to the residents and say that. Say, I want to be more restrictive. I want to take away some of your freedoms or your liberties, and this is how I feel about it. That's a good. That's a very good discussion to have.
Well, yeah, we have.
So can I make a motion? Are we ready for a motion?
Wait, can I just wait for a minute?
Sure.
I agree with David Chow here. That's why we have political discussion. And I mean, I'm on board with the mayor. I really do. I don't like taking away personal, you know, liberties. We do a lot in the city. Just because we do have restrictions on fences and things like that, is that necessarily right? That's my point. So, I mean, it's always up for discussion. I mean, there may be good reasons that we do certain things. And, you know, I like educating people and letting them make their good decisions. If they make bad decisions, there's consequences. But, you know, I don't disagree that the map we did was okay, and I think I would support that. So, but philosophically, I agree with the mayor. I really do.
So this is an action item, and so Chandler does need some direction. There is a suggested motion.
There's not a motion yet. I will make one, though.
I guess the way I would put this is, are you comfortable with 100-foot boundary on Cottonwood Drive being that close to that?
I think you need to direct that to the chief.
I don't know what I would.
I know where the 100 feet came from, and I know that it's arbitrary. There's no rhyme or reason on that. It's just to expand the barrier so they're not doing it right adjacent to it. There's probably a better number there. What it is, I don't know.
Okay, I'm going to make a motion. You can reject it if you want. I move that we approve ordinance number 7-18-2017A, amending City of Cedar Hills City Code 5-2-3, making it unlawful to discharge aerial fireworks in any area as identified by the map created and provided by the City of Cedar Hills.
Okay, I have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Okay. Motion has been seconded by Mr. Geddes. Any further discussion?
So that doesn't cause more restrictions than we currently have, right, Jenny?
No. It's actually less because it doesn't count the bouncy fireworks. It's just aerials.
Okay. So
well, those are still prohibited by resolution. This is now prohibited by resolution, like by ordinance. So there. Wait, when residents wake up tomorrow, there's nothing different in fireworks restrictions from their woods.
It's all the same, correct?
And then yeah. I think later we can define non-stationary fireworks.
And this is where we revisit this in August.
Exactly. Okay. Yep. So it actually lessens the current restriction.
Okay, so I have a motion, and it has been seconded, I believe. Did you second it?
I did.
Mike did. Any further discussion? And we're going to have a vote. Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Mr. Zappala.
Nay.
Mr. Bailey.
Yes.
Mrs. Anderson.
Aye.
Mr. Geddes. Sorry about that, Mike.
Aye.
Okay. Motion passes. Thank you very much. I apologize to your wife.
I'll wear my skirt next week.
All right. Moving on now to item number 9, which is a formality, really. We've done this before, but Pleasant Grove dropped the ball, and so we need to do this again. So it's an action item adjusting property on the Thane property. So go ahead.
Pleasant Grove has a certain amount of time to enact their ordinance to formalize this boundary adjustment. They didn't, even though it's Cedar Hills to Pleasant Grove, so I can't explain that one to you. But nonetheless, we have to revisit this, and this is the Thane property that's still, that's already applied, and we've already voted on this. We just have to revote to restart the clock. So, are there any questions?
Is this time governed by state law?
Yes.
Okay. Someone like to proffer a motion?
I knew the wording I would.
I move that we approve ordinance number 7-18-2017B, an ordinance adjusting the common municipal boundary between the City of Cedar Hills and Pleasant Grove City.
Okay, I have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Mrs. Anderson seconds it. Any further discussion? Let's have a vote. Starting from my right, Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Mrs. Anderson.
Aye.
Mr. Bailey.
No.
Mr. Zappala.
Aye.
Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
The ayes have it. Motion passes. Thank you very much. Let's move on now to item number 10, which is also an action item, a resolution placing an opinion question on the November 7th, 2017 municipal election. Mr. Goodwin, go ahead.
This is one of the formalities we have to do in order to put the park tax onto the ballot for the November election. We've talked about it before. We anticipate that this will be a $40,000 revenue brought into the city for use of parks and recreation, but this does need to be adopted by resolution tonight in order to proceed. Are there any questions from the city council?
I'd like to make a motion.
Please do.
I move that we approve a resolution placing an opinion question on the November 7th, 2000. Oh, approve resolution
7-18-2017.
Resolution placing an opinion question on the November 7th, 2017 municipal general election ballot as to whether or not the city of Cedar Hills should impose a local sales and use tax of 0.1% to fund cultural, recreational, botanical, and zoological organizations and facilities in the city of Cedar Hills, and approving the ballot title and propositions.
Thank you. I have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Mr. Zappala seconds it. Any further discussion?
Yes. Can I just make a request of staff and with the approval of the council, and just as part of my role in communications, can I help you draft the pamphlet, the voter pamphlet information?
Yes, and we will need to make an honest effort to find a second opinion against
opposed opinion. I believe we have to do that by August 9th.
Okay. Well, that's my question.
And we get to have a rebuttal for that as well, right? I think I've seen voter pamphlets where they'll have a rebuttal too.
What happens if we don't have someone that's willing to write?
As long as you try, that's all you can do. I mean, if there isn't someone that's going to, then it doesn't go. You just put in there that no one submitted it.
Now, we, as a city, we cannot expend any funds to promote, like we can't go get banners that say vote on Prop A or anything like that, correct?
Correct.
City can't, but elected officials can.
Elected officials could?
Well, any resident can.
Any resident can.
So if I want to go out and, you know, buy 100 signs that say vote yes on this, I can't?
Absolutely.
Okay, yes. Thank you.
Okay. All right. So there is a motion. It has been seconded. There has been more discussion. Do we need any more? If not, we're going to have a vote. Starting from my right, Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Mrs. Anderson.
Aye.
Mr. Bailey.
Aye.
Mr. Zappala.
Aye.
Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Moving on now to item number 11, which is also an action item. This is adopting the Mountain Land Association of Governments Pre-Disaster Hazard Mitigation Plan. Mr. Goodwin.
Yes, this plan has already been adopted by the city, and I think the most recent one was in 2005 is what I found. But it is a plan to fulfill state and local hazard mitigation planning responsibilities to promote pre- and post-disaster mitigation measures, short- and long-range strategies that minimize suffering, loss of life, and damage to property resulting from hazardous or potentially hazardous conditions to which citizens and institutions within the state are exposed, and to eliminate or minimize conditions which would have an undesirable impact on our citizens, the economy, environment, and well-being of the state of Utah. The plan being presented is an updated plan from the 2005 plan that the city adopted previously, so they're asking that each city adopt the new plan with the changes, and there's no real major changes to the plan as it regards to Cedar Hills.
So this is a resolution, and it's pretty straightforward. Does anyone have any questions on this? If not, I'll take a motion.
We got it on Friday, and I have only made it through a fraction of the 348 pages. Yeah. But I was surprised when I just looked through the Cedar Hills portion. There are things that they say that are ongoing that we're working on, and there are things that they say we haven't even started working on. And so I'm just curious how it – are we proactively working with MAG to come up with a plan for our city on all of these things that they're identifying, and some of the things that they said they didn't have a point of contact for us at the city to help fix. So I don't know.
I noticed a couple things that need to be changed. The point of contact, we have a point of contact. And the city's done a number of things. We've hired Laurie Peterson in the last few years, who is our emergency management personnel and staff, and she goes through the FEMA trainings and she does all the certifications that are necessary there. And I think maybe we just need to do a better job of explaining to MAG what we have done.
So. Okay.
We're a relatively small city. Salt Lake is going to have probably a whole department on this. But for us and our 10,000, we're still a member of it. I've attended some of the meetings. We're just this little tiny.
Just have Laurie on staff.
I understand that. Yeah. But I guess my question was, if we're adopting this and accepting it, are we basically then saying that we're taking on any kind of responsibility or liability for not having implemented the things that MAG is saying that we should be? That's my only concern.
When the meetings I've attended, they just want you to be working towards it.
I know, that's what I'm saying. But some of them say no for Cedar Hills, that we're not. That's why I'm...
Yeah, but we've been a member of it for
years.
Years. Yeah. So it's just...
And some of them, the answer may be no. We may not be working towards them. I don't know which one you're referring
to. Yeah.
I think the one that they had, I can't remember. I'd have to go back and look. Again, it's a huge document.
It is a big document. And keep in mind, some of it deals with other counties, so you can take that section.
I was only looking at Utah County section. Yeah. And so that was my only question. By adopting it, are we...
We are trying to be proactively involved with the county on emergency management. That's why we moved our notification over to Everbridge to be with the county, because that's what Peter Quitner, now the county emergency manager, wanted, so that we're part of any sort of countywide notifications. We are trying to actively work with other members of MAG in order to go in that direction.
Keep in mind, it's a non-binding resolution.
Yeah.
So,
do we fill out any kind of a survey or something? How do they know what we're doing?
Probably just what we report to them.
Yeah, there's a report.
Okay.
Okay. Any further discussion? Not. Let's have a motion.
I'll make a motion.
Thank you very much.
I move that we adopt resolution number 7-18-17-B, a resolution of the City of Cedar Hills, Utah, adopting the Mountainland Pre-Disaster Hazard Mitigation Plan.
Thank you. I have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Mr. Geddes seconds it.
No, Mr. Bailey.
Pardon?
Wasn't me.
Mr. M. Bailey did?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mr. Bailey seconds it. Thank you. Any further discussion? So let's have a vote, starting from my left. Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Mr. Zappala.
Aye.
Mr. Bailey.
Aye.
Mrs. Anderson.
Aye.
Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Next item, last item, is a discussion only. To give the council, the staff some direction on private signs on public property. Yeah. Mr. Goodwin, go ahead.
Just one real quick on the MAG. I believe that some of the funding that we get from emergency management does come from adopting the plan, so that's another reason to adopt. Yes, a discussion on private signs on public property. So when Ernie's was awarded the contract to run the grill, one of the concerns that was raised on social media by residents and by staff and by the council was a lot of people don't know that there's an entity here because there's nothing pointing people to here. Mm-hmm. You only know that it's here if you read the city newsletter, if you read the weekly update, or if you come to the building for one of the various reasons that people come here. So we were discussing with Bernie and this kind of is a rabbit hole when you start talking about public signs or private signs on public property. Currently, we pull signs on that are posted on public property that are, for example, Marco's Pizza opened up this last week, I believe, the week before, and they had grand opening signs on the city's park strip, and we don't allow that, so we pulled them and said, hey, we've got your signs, come get them. My understanding of this is, this is why it's just a discussion, because it does have to go through the Planning Commission, and I want to have multiple discussions with Mr. Shaw on this topic, but if we allow Ernie's to put a private sign on public property, we are opening that door to other entities as well. So in discussing this with Ernie's in Orem, he's got, I don't know how many of you have been to his store in Orem on Center Street. He does not have a full sign that, like McDonald's, you imagine a 30-foot sign with the golden arches on top. He doesn't have a sign like that. So what his staff does every day is they have an A-frame sign, which is temporary, but it's there every day. So they walk it out to the street, put it out on the street, and when they close, they bring it back in. That was an interesting concept because it would allow him to put a sign out on Canyon Road or out on Clubhouse Drive. As people drove by, they'd be able to see that. But it would also open that to great clips to say, hey, $5 cuts today, whatever that is. So it's kind of the rabbit hole we're going down with this. But it is a discussion item, and we'd like to have some direction from the council to take to the Planning Commission as we move forward, because we do want to help Ernie be successful as much as we can. Yeah.
Can I ask David Shaw a question about that? The difference between like a Great Clips or a Marco's Pizza is that they don't lease facilities from the city, and Ernie's does.
Right.
True.
And so there's a little bit of a gray line there.
It's more of a partnership, right?
Or how about we, with our marquee out there, David, if we just add some space on the marquee, and anything that's in this facility is allowed to have a spot on that marquee,
would assume also includes karate classes and theaters classes and singing classes.
You open it up to just permanent things.
Well, that's what I'm saying, is all those people rent space at this facility.
I'm telling you, this is a rabbit hole.
So that's why.
I like rabbits. So,
but we do restrict the number you can have.
We do, but.
Well, and do you allow the things that each of you might consider to be unsavory, which I'm sure in each of your cases is something different. And nonetheless, it opens it up to First Amendment concerns if you don't allow those sorts of things.
Are you talking like avocado spread on toast? That's unsavory.
I like avocado spread.
We also have the church that meets here on a regular basis.
Let's go back to when that marquee was approved. If you remember right, the original design had we're proposing to put some LED lights in there to say, Smith Johnson wedding.
And I supported that, and it was slammed.
And the residents were adequately opposed to that. So, in order to encompass everything that's in this building and every use in this building, there's not a sign in the world that's that big. Well, maybe the one out by Thanksgiving Point.
So let me attempt a 60-second primer on this. What we're talking about is First Amendment issues and who has the right to be in the public space when you open it up to everybody or somebody. And so in that context, there are areas where the city clearly doesn't have to open up at all. You don't have to allow somebody to advertise on the rooftop of the building. But if you do, then the question becomes, who gets to advertise on the building? And is it a limited public forum, or is it a wide open public forum? And there are legitimate circumstances for which you can limit the public forum, and there are other circumstances where you cannot. That is the rabbit hole that we're talking about. Is it a lockdown forum with no advertisement at all? Is it a limited public forum, or is it a public forum? And those are the issues that need to be decided before you open it up to anybody.
Does this at all pertain to elementary schools that advertise on their sign, and that's public property in a public school?
Since I'm not advising them at the moment, I'm going to punt. But the answer is probably yes. Although I'm sure they have some other additional protections granted to them because they're schools.
Yeah. So I would also be open for Ernie's to put a sign out on our building, above their outside entrance.
Well, on
their
facility door itself, they can put
no,
signs
I mean,
on the windows.
No, I mean the lighted one above, so that when someone pulls in, they can see that. There again, it's the rabbit hole. It's the rabbit hole, but that's just something to look.
I'm putting an A-frame out front, but then do I allow other entities to put A-frames in front of their businesses on city property?
That, I guess that was my question from last time that I still would like addressed is I, and this is for Dave, I would like a legal analysis of if we allow Ernie's to put signs on public property, what are we then required to do for every other private company? That's what I want to know.
And I'm happy to provide you that analysis.
And can we put a boundary on it that it only applies to companies in our building?
Yes.
Yeah, and so it's a more detailed analysis than we have time for in this discussion.
Yeah.
So I'm happy to give you something in writing on that.
Yeah. I'd
the short answer, however, is that as long as you're restricting the space that you're using for the advertisement, It doesn't mean you have to open it up to every public property within the city. In other words, it doesn't go to every easement, every park strip. You can say, we are going to put up a sign, and that sign has to be rotated to the people who do the following, X, Y, Z. But that's it. And that's the limited public forum. The wide open public forum would be to say, every property owned by the city can be used by anybody for any purpose of free speech. Now, to a degree, that does exist. If I wanted to bring my hecklers out and heckle somebody on the park strip in front of their house, nothing they can do about it. Unless I become disorderly or I firebomb their house or other things like that. But as long as I restrict it to heckling and stick within the park space, then there's nothing that can be done about it. That's my right of free speech. And if the city does try to shut me down, why then I have a cause of action against the city for violating my First Amendment rights. This is a different circumstance where we're talking about using the city space for commercial advertising. And so you can legitimately restrict that commercial advertising to those who belong in the commercial advertisement. That becomes the issue that Chandler talked about. How wide open do you make that, especially in a community event center? So
we have 50
Ms.
plus.
Reese, I'd be happy to get you an analysis.
That'd be great, because we have 50 plus home-based businesses that could be considered. We have preschools in the city and dance studios who may love to advertise on Canyon Road. So that's what I would just like to understand, what the consequences are for changing that ordinance.
And on top of that, First Amendment issues aside, moving out the marquee, there's two marquees, two sides to each one, so there's four. We'd be looking at, and each one of those panels is a couple grand, we'd be looking at spending, upwards of 10 grand to replace those panels in order to put someone's sign on there. And quite frankly, we haven't had a tenant here long enough where I'm willing to do that right now.
Right.
I would like to be established before we start talking about changing the marquees.
I'm
rooting for Ernie's. I've been to lunch twice there this week, and it's only Tuesday. But I do want them to be established before we start having that discussion.
And I agree with you there on the marquee. I don't think it makes sense for us to financially change our marquee, especially if we do have rotating things. I'm thinking more of them having their own signage. But, again, I don't know what
that's why I like the temporary A-frame idea.
There's also another possible solution, because I'm going to be really creative. We could potentially lease land on Canyon Road that the city owns for purposes of placing a sign there. We could potentially sell a little tiny
people rent a little space,
private property, for putting a sign.
It could be part of Ernie's lease.
It could be. And so let's go down that path, and now you lease some land and put up a billboard, because it's easy to envision who gets to be on the billboard.
Ernie's.
Whoever leased
just
that
Ernie's
land.
Yep, just Ernie's.
But why not anybody else who leases this building?
Because
we entered a lease agreement with them.
But that doesn't matter. That's
just like only one owner gets to lease the grill at a time.
Yeah. No, I'm not saying the grill. I'm saying this facility.
No, I understand that, but only one owner can lease the grill at a time, so why can't we lease a piece of property for a sign that only one person gets
I don't know. So I'm asking from a legal perspective, can't we do that? Can we tell everybody else that leases this building, no, you can't?
Coming soon to a legal analysis near you.
And that is why we're going to do a written analysis.
Well, yeah, if you attach that land to his lease, why not? Why can't that just be his?
I think it's a good option.
Let me just say, this is not a new issue to me. I've researched it many times before, and so let me dust off the research and modernize it and get it back to you.
So we're not going to have a resolution tonight, but is there any other legal analysis that we would like Mr. Shaw to do?
Because that's really without redesigning the whole sign, you could always snipe that sign, which means you could take a corner of it and add on to it,
put a little addition,
put a little, Ernie's logo that could be then attached to that sign.
One of them needs to be replaced anyway because it looks like it's pretty.
Can I ask one other question?
Yeah.
If a private property owner happens to reside at the corner of Bay Hill and Canyon Road, can a private property owner put up a commercial sign pointing towards Ernie's business?
We've had that done before. So Garbett Homes did a subdivision down in Bridgestone, and they worked out an agreement with a homeowner on Canyon Road where they had a sign that said solar homes and they had an arrow pointing down to Bridgestone. And, I mean, they had to fall within certain parameters the city outlines for sign ordinance as far as square footage and, you know, it couldn't be neon lights and flashing, but we do allow stuff like that.
Okay. These are good ideas. Why don't we have Mr. Shaw look at that as well? Okay. Anything else? All right, ladies and gentlemen, that is it. Someone make a motion to adjourn.
I move that we adjourn.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. This is the last time we ever have to go to a long chair.